It's Patricia Karpus, host of Untangle, the award-winning podcast that covers topics like optimizing brain health, finding your purpose, how to sleep better, harnessing the power of anxiety, successfully changing habits, finding more happiness and joy, and overall, all the many ways to live your best life. If you enjoy hearing from thought leaders, neuroscientists, psychologists, nutritionists, business leaders, and more, join us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. My name is Dwayne Osterlund, and I'm your host, and we are on to the next episode. Today, my guest is very special to me. She is a friend and colleague, and her name is Zoe Kors, and she has just released her book, Radical Intimacy. So we dive in to talk about what intimacy is and why it is so necessary to get fulfillment in our life, to overcome pain, and to generally feel better about where we are in this world and how radical intimacy can get you there, to get you to that place where you feel good about your life, you feel connected, and you have the support you need. So I really enjoyed talking with Zoe about her work and her book, and I hope you enjoy it as well. Before we start the episode, if you are enjoying the Addicted Mind podcast, please leave a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. I do read them. They mean a lot to me to see that the work I'm doing has a positive impact on all of you out there and that you all are getting a lot out of it. So I really do appreciate all the people that have taken the time to do that. And it really does help people find the Addicted Mind podcast. So thank you so much if you've done that. And think about joining our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook, type in the Addicted Mind podcast and click join. All right, let's go ahead and start this episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. I have an incredible guest today. Her name is Zoe Kors, and she is the author of the book Radical Intimacy. And she is also a friend and colleague. And so, Zoe, I am so excited to talk to you about your work and what you're doing and this book. And I know this has been a huge project for you. And I have been lucky enough to see this grow and work with you and to see it all come together. So please just introduce yourself.
Thanks, Dwayne. It's so great to be here with you. Yeah, so my name is Zoe Kors, and I am a sex and intimacy coach. I work with you, Dwayne, with helping couples heal.
Right, yeah.
And I also have a private practice, and I am the resident sex and intimacy coach for a sexual wellness app called Coral. I have my own podcast called the Radical Intimacy Podcast, which I launched sort of in conjunction with the book to really, I feel like there are so many conversations to have, and Dwayne will have you on that podcast as well.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah. So that's who I am.
Awesome. So we're going to just jump right in. And let's just talk about writing this book. But wait. Before we do that, I want to say what I love about this, to set the stage for this, is that, you know, intimacy is such a key part of healing from trauma and addiction. So when your book came out, I was so excited about that because it's so important in this process of healing. So I want to put that as a stage. We're going to get all into that. But first, writing this book, why now? Why do it? Why put it out there?
Well, so over the years that I've been doing this work, I hear over and over and over again a common theme, people talking about wanting to feel deeply connected, people talking about feeling isolated or lonely, even inside of a partnership, like a marriage, and feeling like I sort of borrowed from my own personal practice. I've been a lifelong meditator and definitely have sort of, I'm a Zen Buddhist practitioner and a yoga practitioner. And so a lot of those sort of Eastern philosophies and practices really sort of lend themselves to alleviating the kind of loneliness and that feeling of like disconnection. And right, so this book has been in the making, you know, I mean, the seeds of it were planted probably when I was a child, actually, but, you know, at least several years ago. But then when the pandemic hit, I mean, that's just a whole new level of needing to navigate connection, human connection in a new paradigm. And I mean, we'll get to this, but like really ultimately at the foundation of that is the connection with ourselves.
Yeah. And that's what one of the things I love about reading your book is that this is, it's radical intimacy. It's bigger than just sexuality. It's like you said, so many of us can struggle with that feeling of loneliness and isolation. And maybe, like you said earlier, the own seeds of our childhood set us up not to be able to do it. Or struggle to it. So we end up feeling alone.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something that we aren't taught to do. We are conditioned to do the opposite. We're conditioned to look for authority outside of ourselves. And that's not to say, like, I'm actually not a libertarian, and I'm not somebody who feels like, you know, self exists at the expense of other. You know, but there's both. And our ability, I mean, the truth is, Duane, you know this as well as I do. We can only meet each other to the extent that we can meet ourselves, right? We can't share a piece of ourselves if we don't know what it is that we're sharing. So, right? We need to really spend some time. And the thing is that, you know, talking about conditioning, we are taught to invest resources, time, energy, money into things like financial stability and physical fitness and health and wellness. But we are also told not to talk about intimacy, about sex or relationships, all of that. That just takes care of itself. But that's actually, nothing could be farther from the truth.
Yeah, it's like we're really stuck in that dilemma. You know, it's like health and wellness, but let's not talk about it.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to talk about it, you're not going to learn about yourself. You're not going to explore yourself. And yeah, you can't connect what you don't know.
Right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
So that's why the book. That's why the book. Because I see this pervasive longing for connection and fear of connection, fear and anxiety around intimacy, and also a real longing to feel deeply connected. So a lot of my work is right through that framework, you know.
Right. So let's talk about that and go a little bit deeper into that, because I know for my own life and my own life journey, it's been a process of gaining intimacy to the self. It's been a process of being open to others, especially when you have some childhood trauma that stops that. So let's jump into that process and talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So I define and name three kinds of intimacy. There are three levels of intimacy as well. And I draw sort of a radical intimacy matrix, which is like a roadmap to the intersection of the three levels and the three kinds. Create, if you grid it out like a bingo card, create these nine areas of opportunity to cultivate connection or intimacy. And so, you know, when you're talking about intimacy with yourself, the three kinds of intimacy are emotional, physical, and energetic, what I call energetic. So just briefly, like emotional intimacy is the experience of recognizing, articulating, expressing, and accepting the feelings and sentiments and moods of ourselves and others, right?
Right.
Physical intimacy is the experience of connection and familiarity with our own physicality as well as that of another. So when we're physically intimate with ourselves, we know how our body works, what sensations are pleasurable, and which cause discomfort or pain, right? So sex is one form of physical intimacy, but you know, it's not the only form. There's a whole world of physical intimacy to explore outside of sex. Energetic intimacy is, and I really had to kind of work to convey what I'm talking about, because this is a realm that I live in quite a bit as a Zen practitioner. You know, I'm very, this is the space of meditation. It's the space of presence, right? So energetic intimacy is the experience of feeling deeply connected to someone or ourselves beyond the utility of speech and touch. It's composed of three pillars: presence, humility, and curiosity. And you'll often see that come up in situations where you're walking in the woods or even with somebody else, like shared experiences with a couple. I often use, when I coach couples, I lean into these shared experiences of energetic intimacy because it's neutral territory.
Right, right. You know, what you're describing and what I make up you're saying is that presence of being in that moment. And I think in some ways, you can't capture that in language. It's really hard to capture that in words because it's like you're saying, it's a felt sense. It's something that we experience in the moment, that if we've done some of our work, we're outside of some of our trauma, we're able to have that. And it's a closeness.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when, by the time you put that awareness, you process that through the brain and out your mouth in the form of language, you're already a few steps beyond it, right? So it's that, it really is that awareness moment to moment to moment to moment. And that allows you so much possibility, right? Like you're outside of, or really the way I sort of visualize, and I'm a very visual person, but you're sort of actually underneath or beyond it, but on a foundational level where it's like, it's outside of the realm of shame or regret or self-loathing or anxiety. It's just, you're there. It's like a connection that exists. And part of it, I mean, it sounds a little woo, but part of it is indescribable. I mean, it's so hard to really use language to describe it because it defies language.
Right. Yeah. And so you know it when you're there because you're in the experience of it. And it's hard to communicate it because, yeah, it's a felt sense. It's hard to put words. Language is just a metaphor for our experience.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
definitely understood. And I think it's something that we all crave, that connection on some deep level, a connection to the world, to others. But one thing I want to talk about, I think it's something else, is that there's a lot of roadblocks along the way to get there. So we know we want to get there. We know we want to have this radical intimacy, especially if we've been hurting, especially if we've had trauma. But yeah, there's roadblocks.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm curious, I mean, you do this work and you help people all the time. So I'm curious what roadblocks you see.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think one of the things you were talking about earlier about having like the emotional intimacy part and the physical intimacy part, I would say on the emotional level, sometimes if we have overwhelming emotions, maybe once I keep going back to trauma, but you know, sometimes that sets the stage where we're so overwhelmed by our emotional experience in the moment that we can't be in the moment. Because right. we're in a lot of pain. Maybe it's anxiety or depression or shame, or and that blocks us from kind of connecting on this very intimate level.
Yes, right, exactly. And I think that some of the, you know, somatic experiencing and some of the techniques, mindfulness techniques for dealing with triggers and learning to self-regulate, all of that is so valuable. And really what I find is that we can access intimacy with ourselves through what I call central awareness, right? So through the vehicle of our five senses, we can kind of,
right.
And that really, when you think about it, when we're first born, that's how we experience the world, You know, it's extremely direct because we don't have the cognitive sophistication to add meaning to everything the way we do when we're adults. We're like meaning-making machines, you know, by the time we're adults. So when you take it right back to that sort of central awareness, what am I, you know, and this is like the classic orienting trauma exercise. What am I, you know, what am I hearing? What am I seeing? What am I feeling, tasting? You know, it's very smelling. It brings you to a present moment in a way and out of your own story.
Right. And as you know, I'm a big fan of mindfulness. I love mindfulness. It's been very important in my life as part of this healing process because it's allowed me to work to be more present. And you talk a lot about that in the book as well. Can you talk a little bit more about how that's part of this radical intimacy?
Yeah. Presence itself or mindfulness.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I take that, and I do this often in workshops. I'm speaking at at the Milken Global Conference, and I was just writing my little talk this weekend.
Right.
And I decided to do something that I often do at live events, and that is to guide people through a meditation in which they imagine drinking their cup of coffee. And if you're not obsessed with coffee the way I am, you can do this with tea or an apple or a piece. Sometimes I do, like, I have people actually bring an apple to a workshop and we do this in real life together, but you can do it in your imagination. So with the coffee, when I get up in the morning, I grind my beans and I boil my water in my water boiler and I set my cup out and I put my little filter in and in my Chemex and I do all the things. And as I'm doing it, I'm listening to the sound of the grinder and the water boiling and the beeping of the thing that tells me it's ready. I'm looking at the filter. I feel the filter paper just to kind of like have a tactile experience. I'm thinking about the bean that grew the plant, that produced the flowers, that produced the beans, that, you know, and then the farmer who picked the beans, the grocer, the truck driver who transported, the packager, all of it. All of the things that contributed to this moment for me of being able to drink my coffee. This is part of my morning practice, right? And it's that level of awareness where, like, I could not be more intimate with my cup of coffee. Like, right. I am so appreciative and present to this cup of coffee and everything that is in this cup of coffee that at that point, and that's really, you know, that's like uber presence.
Right.
To the experience of coffee. When you think about approaching your life, like, take that level of awareness to your shower, to driving your car, to interactions with people, to the next time you have sex, you know, a board meeting. Like, can you imagine experiencing your life with that level of intimacy?
Yeah. You know, that's where connection comes from. I was thinking about, as you were talking, the practice of doing that with your coffee or whatever you choose, going for a walk or however you do that, is the place you start. But I'm also imagining in our relationships with others, it can unwind pretty quick. And all of a sudden, we're not present and we're not connected. And where did it go?
Right. Where did it go? It's such a good question. And it's so easy to go down that rabbit hole before you even know it. And all of a sudden you become aware of the fact that you're down at the bottom of the rabbit hole, right? Yeah. So one of the things that I talk about in the book, and one of the things that sort of changed my whole life that comes into service every time there's a difficult situation, is to step into witness consciousness. And what that means is that you're able to simultaneously be in the experience, but also witness yourself in the experience. So you know always in the back of your mind that there's a larger context, that this is one situation. It's one blip in a number of blips that compose your life or your relationship with, you know, whatever the difficulty is, right? And so if you can hold that, and listen, it takes practice, right? That's why we sort of, we plug into the larger context when we meditate or drink a cup of coffee mindfully, or for some people, they run, you know, they're able to step out. Or I know Jeff Bridges, the actor, talked about surfing one time, and he said it's like, it's an unbelievable experience to be able to go out on the surfboard and look back at the shore and sort of remember the larger context of our little lives. Right.
That it's so much bigger than this moment.
Right. So I think that's definitely comes into play. It's like, you know, in those moments, we can learn to connect with and step into witness consciousness. Again, the easiest, that like the doorway into that territory is the present moment and our five senses and presence to that.
Right. And I was thinking, what, you know, as you were talking as well, like we need some kind of structure to be able to do that. Sometimes some kind of cognitive structure. And you have in your book, the intimacy matrix that kind of lays this structure out. Because I think we can talk about the mindfulness and connecting to this big,
the mystery, I call it often.
The mystery, yeah. Maybe the mystery.
or the oneness, right?
Or the oneness, or whatever it is, as we work towards intimacy and connection and all of that. But we can get lost without some kind of structure to help us get there, I guess. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. So the matrix is, again, it's like the intersection of the three kinds and the three levels of intimacy. So you end up with... these nine areas are physical intimacy with self, physical intimacy with others, physical intimacy with the world. That, and then the same for emotional and energetic intimacy. It's like those three kinds of intimacy at those three levels. So you have this, and the idea is that all of them, we're going to be at home in one or two of these areas. They're going to feel really natural. We love being there. It's easy for us. Like whatever that is, you might have, you know, you might love to, you might know everything about your body, be a really embodied person. And you feel like you can feel how your body feels energetically and what foods make you feel good and what happens when you sleep. Athletes are often like very intimate with their physicality.
Right.
And then you might be really awkward and anxious about physical intimacy with someone else, you know? So the areas that you are anxious about or that are overwhelming or scary, of course, are the biggest opportunities for growth. So what I find is cultivating intimacy and working all nine areas of the matrix really fortifies your life and balances you in a way that you can move through relationships skillfully.
Right. And I love that you lay it out this way in this matrix, because I found that we tend to be really good at one area, one or two of those areas. And then that's where we put all of our energy, is into this area that we're really good at, but we miss this other area that we have to work on, or there's anxiety about that area, whatever. And so we get stuck.
Yeah, not only that, Dwayne, but like then we try to get everybody in our lives to come stand in those areas with us when they're not necessarily native to that. Like we get all entitled and indignant about like, you need to emotionally connect with me. You know, if you don't emotionally connect with me, then I'm not going to physically connect with you. And then the other one is like, I need to physically connect with you in order to feel like I can open up emotionally to you. And so we get in this thing where we're standing in other squares from each other, trying to like communicate. And so, you know, walking around all nine areas, and I give practices in the book to cultivate those things and what to look for and why this works this way. And we're really trying to rewire our brains to be able to connect better.
Yeah, and it gives you the structure to do that. So a question I'm having is, how did you come up with the structure? How did you start to do that and put that all together? Maybe that's a big question. I see you're smiling and you're like, smiling. Oh boy.
I don't know that I have a really solid answer for that. I mean, I think it's a little bit of, like I said, it's sort of my own personal practice all these years. And it all really started, I was going to say, with my 10-year sexless marriage in my 20s, and I tell that story in the book. And that really launched me on this path of, like, how could a self-aware, happy young woman who really loves her husband. I mean, we continue. We're like brother and sister. Like, we're very good friends. And we had a very good marriage, except that I had absolutely no desire for him. So that was a piece of it, you know, like it set me on this path of trying to understand the nature of sexuality and connection. Right. I look back, though, and, you know, I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma when I was 20 in college. And that was another moment of, like, inquiry for me. And that was a big, I'll tell you, I used to lie awake at night in high school listening to Alan Watts.
I love Alan Watts.
Yeah, really incredible. If you're listening to this and you don't know who Alan Watts is, just look him up on YouTube, Google him, and listen to some of the audio talks that he did. They would play his talks on the radio at night, and I would lie in bed. And that's a lot about, like, he introduced me at the age of, like, 16, 17, that this life isn't, there's more to it than we can see. And that's witness consciousness that we're talking about. There's a larger context here. And don't take yourself so seriously. So a few years later, when I'm in college and I have cancer, that mindset, that awareness really served me. So all of this contributed to the Matrix. And really, like, I'm reminded of Paul McCartney saying that he has no idea how he wrote Yesterday. It just came through him, you know?
Right.
Like, it's not something that he did. Later on, I got, and I tell this story too with Owen in the book, about a relationship with someone who really said to me, like, I want to be more intimate with you than anybody. And I was like, oh, yeah, anybody ever, that any two humans have ever been. I'm like, what does that look like? He's like, I don't know, but let's try it. And so there was a lot of, like, physical intimacy and energetic intimacy was off the charts, but he was completely emotionally unavailable.
Right.
And again, like, he couldn't be with his emotions. So he just, like, vomited them all over me.
Yeah.
And I had to deal with that.
And so it's like, this has come out of all of these experiences as you've slowly learned and grown and explored and your own situations, your own stuff, right?
Yeah.
And that this is all kind of come to the culmination of this book of radical intimacy and putting all these stories together and all these learnings and giving it back.
Yeah. And clients, you know, there are a lot of client stories
All of those experiences coming, all of those learnings and that wisdom that comes with the experience and the willingness to explore and be open.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my own life is my laboratory, and I learned so much from my clients as well, like, just sort of watching them navigate. And I mean, I really see coaching as a real partnership. You know, I know a lot of things. I know a lot of things, and a lot of things that can be helpful and in service of a client's healing, but it's really, every client is brand new, and it's really sort of an expedition. You know, we enter into this sort of laboratory together, and I enter into their world, and I listen to what they're dealing with, and together we sort of navigate into a path of healing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, intimacy brings that to us. So the more we can be intimate, the more we can heal, the more we can walk through our suffering, and we're not all alone.
Yeah, that's right. And this idea of, we talked about how we're not taught to sort of work this part of our lives, but, you know, we're not taught to be with ourselves. Like, there's a particular skill set for being with yourself and not, I mean, there's a difference between being alone and being lonely.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, you started talking a little bit about, like, how do we skillfully be with ourselves? And that is a lot to do with presence, right? And without, like, assigning meaning and without future tripping or past tripping, right? And really, like, leave the past in the past. Stop beating yourself up about it. The future will, you know, unfold as it will. Stop tripping over it. And just be present. Be here now, as Ram Dass said.
Yeah. Yeah, be here now. And I like that you say that as, and refer to it as a skill, because a skill is something that you can build and create and work on, right? It's not something just magical that you do or you don't do. It's a skill. Skills take practice.
Right. Absolutely. We can all learn this stuff. And truly, it's not that hard.
Right. Right. In some ways. Yeah.
The hard part is committing to doing it.
Yeah, I would think,
but,
yes.
But absolutely. The actual doing of it is really not very hard at all. We can all do it. I mean, the exercises in my book are, like, they're super simple. It's not rocket science or, you know, brain surgery.
Yeah, totally. So, Zoe, I want to thank you so much for coming on. Before we end, I always like to ask guests one question. And that's, if anybody's out there listening, I hope people are out there listening. And if they are, maybe they're struggling. Maybe they're wondering about intimacy or connection or feeling lonely. What would you want to tell them? If you could tell them one thing, what would you want to say?
If I could tell people one thing, I would want them to know that they're doing a good job, that they're okay. That it's this business of being human is not easy. Or we believe it's not easy, right? But, you know, I like to say that you are not alone. You're not alone. And I mean that. But also, we are alone. We're each alone, but we're in that aloneness together. There are other people just like you feeling just the same thing as you, and we tend to think that we are the only ones. So if you are feeling lonely and isolated, or you're suffering or questioning yourself in some way, just know that you're right on track. That's part of the human experience, and that there are millions and millions of people wondering the same thing along with you about themselves.
Thank you so much, Zoe. It's been a pleasure. How can people find out about you, or if they want more information or they want to find your book, where can they go?
ZoeKors.com, ZoeKors, as in Sam.com, is kind of my hub. You can find out about all the things there. And the book is available wherever you buy books. If you don't want to go to my site and you just want to buy the book, you can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or your independent bookstore. Wherever you buy books, it's there.
Awesome. And I will put all that information in the show notes as well at TheAddictedMind.com. Zoe, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom.
Thank you so much, Dwayne. What a pleasure.
All right. Thank you for listening to the Addicted Mind podcast. As usual, all the show notes will be at theaddictedmind.com. There you can get the link to all of Zoe's work and her books. And before you go, if you're enjoying the Addicted Mind, please rate and review us in iTunes or share the podcast with a friend. I really do appreciate that. And join our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook, type in the Addicted Mind podcast, and click join. All right, everyone. I hope that you have a wonderful day, and I will talk to you on the next episode.
It's easy to blame ourselves for our struggles with alcohol. We see people around us being able to control their drinking without any consequences, yet no matter what we try, we can't seem to figure it out for ourselves. My name is Jillian Teets, and I am the host of the Sober Powered podcast, where I use my biochemistry background to explain the latest research in addiction and help you understand both why you drink the way you do and how to develop the skills and mindset you need to find freedom from alcohol. I discuss topics like why we think about our drinking 24/7, why we have no off switch, and why we crave alcohol. If you're struggling with your drinking or you know someone who is, then I hope that you will check out the Sober Powered podcast. New episodes every Friday. See you there.